Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good evening out there and welcome back. Jim Potts on the air and always glad to be here. If you're in California, I hope you're enjoying this hot weather because it is definitely hot out there. Get those air conditioners working, get those fans working, whatever you got to do. Kick back, grab yourself a drink, cold drink, beer, whatever it is, and let's have some fun today. At any rate, before we get started talking about some of these areas, we're going to be talking about the LA Times bombing. We're going to be talking about that foil plot for the July 4th parade out there in Cleveland, Ohio, where an individual, I call him a crazed individual, was actually putting explosive devices and toys that he was going to give out to the children of veterans. Yeah, believe it or not. You know, we always talk about the guns, whether they're automatic rifles, handguns, etc., gun control. But, you know, today we're going to be focusing on another way that people who commit mass murders operate, and that's with bombs, different kinds of bombs. Now, I got an email that somebody has sent me that I thought that I would share with you, and I get things kind of like from across the country. This one is real interesting that I thought that I would share with you. And you're not going to believe this one, so hold on to your seat, so to speak. And I'll kind of give you a basic headline. A Waseca man was accused of planting an explosive device inside of a sex toy intended for one of his ex-girlfriends. Now, we're talking about an explosive device. See, this is what I was telling somebody, that, you know, these devices, when it comes to explosions, they can be any and all sizes. Depends on how much harm they want to do to an individual. In this particular case, this gentleman was apparently upset with ex-girlfriends, by the way, not just one. And then according to a criminal complaint that was actually filed, which I do have and have read, he was charged with felony counts of creating this explosive device and making terrorist threats. Now, he was actually going to give this to them as Christmas gifts to show his displeasure, I guess, with them breaking up with him. Well, he ended up pleading guilty. He ended up getting caught, quite frankly, before any of those devices, I'll say, were operated. He ended up getting caught. Somebody had caught on what he was doing. He had told somebody, and he was subsequently arrested. Now, it was discovered after he had been kicked out of another woman's apartment where he had left behind a container marked Christmas gifts. So I guess she went inside to look to see what they were and ended up calling the police, and the bomb squad, you know, came out and found that the sex toys were rigged with gunpowder and buckshot, all attached to a trigger with a battery port. They also found two vibrators, including a pink one marked with Merry Christmas, and then he used the B word, all right, which I'm not going to repeat. I don't like that word personally, but that's what he did. So he later got caught, and he admitted it, said he really did build a bomb out of the dildos for his ex-girlfriend as a Christmas present, and in exchange for pleading guilty to that act of explosive love, we'll say, they dropped the charges against him for making terrorist threats. But apparently he did get some time for the for the attempted use of the sex toys, explosive dildos. Let's put it that way. So at any rate, glad he wasn't able to succeed, but that just goes to show you how far people can go. And quite frankly, how easy it is for people to actually be able to make explosive devices. I remember when I was in the terrorist investigation classes, we did that. I mean, these things can be made so easy, it's incredible. Getting it off the internet, getting the ingredients to make these things and how they harm people. And I remember one situation when we were taking that course, or that schooling, if you will, where one woman had put it in an explosive device in her husband's toolbox. So he was a technician, And that particular day, he didn't take the car where she put it, and they owned two cars. He took the other car, and he ended up not getting blown up. And then she had second thoughts, and then somehow or another the police got involved. I don't remember the whole deal, but we actually had it. It was incredible the way this thing was made up. But anyway, she ended up obviously going to jail. And, you know, again, these things can be put in anything. That was a toolbox. The other one was a dildo, et cetera. Well, let's get back on one that's a little bit more serious. You know, one of the things that I really want to do each week is go back in time. Because I think as Americans, we have a tendency to forget. You know, we're talking about all of these different things that are going on now, but we don't look back into the past enough to see that these things are just simply not new. So because the subject area is bombs, I wanted to go back, way back, to 1910, the Los Angeles Times bombing. Most people don't even know about it, but it took place at, you know, 1:07 a.m. on October 1st of 1910. And what was that about? Believe it or not, a union dispute, a huge union dispute. Now, they were apparently two brothers, James and John McNamara, and they were all part of this union. The union officials, you know, the United States Steel and the American Bridge Company, they all got together. They wanted to expand the union membership. So they turned around and apparently were upset because in Los Angeles wasn't cooperating as much as they would have liked to. Let's put it this way. San Francisco was doing well. California was not. They were trying to expand the membership. And this big fiasco basically came because the Los Angeles employers had actually been successfully resisting unionization for nearly 50 years. So this was a big deal. So the issue, of course, was, you know, that the unions wanted to keep the wages high. Open shop employers in Los Angeles were able to undermine the wage standards set in heavily unionized San Francisco, which I don't want to get political, but San Francisco, the wages are still higher than down here in the city of San Francisco. Unions in San Francisco feared that employers in their city would soon begin pressing for wage cuts and start an open shop drive of their own. So the only solution they saw was to reunionize Los Angeles. So the San Francisco unions basically relied heavily on the iron workers, and one of the few strong unions remaining in Los Angeles. So the unionization campaign began roughly around the spring of 1910. And then on June 1st, 1910, 1,500 iron workers struck iron manufacturers, and they ended up getting a 50 cents an hour minimum wage. Now, just to let you know, that probably will equate out to about 12 bucks, and plus they got overtime pay. So a judge apparently issued a series of injunctions which, you know, all but banned picketing. So there was no picketing, and you know how the unions like to picket. And then on top of that, on July 15th, the L.A. City Council unanimously enacted an ordinance banning picketing and speaking in public streets in a loud or unusual tone with a penalty of 50 days in jail or a $100 fine or both. Can you imagine that? 50 days in jail for speaking out in public in a loud way. Gee, just think about where we are now with all of that, how many people would be going to jail. But anyway, so most of the union members refused to obey the injunctions or the ordinance, and about 472 workers, you know, strikers, were actually arrested. So there became obviously a discontent with all of this. So the McNamara brothers basically ended up getting together and trying to figure out what they were going to do. So on the evening of September 30th, 1910, one of the brothers, J.B. McNamara, left a suitcase full of dynamite in an alley between the Times building and the Times annex, known as Ink Alley. The suitcase was left near barrels of flammable printer's ink. And then the dynamite had a detonator connected to a mechanical wind-up clock set close to an electronic battery circuit. And at 1 a.m., it went off. Now, meanwhile, Mr. McNamara was in his vehicle heading back to the San Francisco area when this all took place. But then on top of that, he had left similar bombs, also set to explode at 1 a.m., next to the homes of Times publisher Harrison Gray Otis and the home of Felix, now you got to help me with this one, Zehandeklar, secretary of the one of the local unions there. McNamara then boarded, he had boarded this train. He was already heading out of town. Now, at 1:07, the bombs went off on the alley outside the three-story L.A. Times building. It was located at that time on 1st Street and Broadway in Los Angeles. The 16 sticks of dynamite in the suitcase bomb were not enough to destroy the whole building, but the bomb ignited natural gas piped into the building. See, that wasn't their expectation. That piece they didn't know. The Times was a morning paper, and so had employees been working during the late night, early employees had been working during the late night morning hours. Now, the bombers were unaware that a number of Times employees were working overnight to produce an extra edition the next afternoon. So the reason why they had set it off at night was because of the fact that they didn't think that there was going to be that many people there, if anybody at all. See, some of this you can't anticipate. And in this particular case, it ended up really being disastrous, make a long story short. Now, the bomb collapsed the side of the building, and the ensuing fire destroyed the Times building and a second structure next door that housed the paper's printing press. Of the 115 people still in the building, 21 died, and most of them in the fire. The Times called the bombing the crime of the century, and publisher Otis said, well, he had some negative comments about the unions. I won't repeat those in the air, but I'll say that he also said they were cowardly murderers and leeches upon honest labor and midnight assassins. Now, the exact number of deaths is uncertain, but over 100 other people were injured. The remains of 20 were identified, but parts of either one or two additional bodies were pulled from the rubble and were never identified. Now, this just goes to show you that, once again, if somebody wants to engage in this kind of behavior, without a doubt, they're going to be able to do it. Now, you may be wondering what happened to the McNamara brothers. Well, they were arrested. All right, they were both arrested the following April, 1911, for the bombing. And then their trial became, how do we put this? They were celebrated for their cause for the American labor movement. Now, J.B., the one who actually planted the bomb, admitted to setting the explosive and was convicted and sentenced to life in prison. His brother was sentenced to 15 years in prison for bombing a local iron manufacturing plant and returned to the Iron Workers Union as an organizer after he got out of jail. But they actually had a series of these. Between 1906 and 1911, the iron workers actually blew up 110 iron works. I mean, that's a lot. So, you know, again, when I start talking about what people can do, what they're able to do, they'll find a way. So, you know, all of the issues regarding, First Amendment right or Second Amendment rights, being able to do these, make these AR-15s, automatic rifles off the internet, et cetera, how they can get these, not get these. It really doesn't matter for some of these people. If these individuals are crazy enough to want to do something like this, they're going to find their way. And that's really the bottom line. You know, before I forget, if you're interested in calling in, the number is 818-602-4929. Or you can send us an email, as some people do, at listenupwithjim or with JP at pottsandassociates.com. Again, that's 818-602-4929. All right. So let's keep moving along a little bit here. They had an issue that actually came up on the 4th of July. Now, apparently, the agents from the FBI had arrested this individual. I'll give his name in a few minutes here. Accused of planning a terrorist attack on the 4th of July in downtown Cleveland. Now, as it turns out, this individual, I'll give you his name. His name was Abdur Rahim Rafiq, and he was arrested because of the FBI having worked with him from an undercover standpoint. So they're out there doing their job, is the bottom line. And this individual, as I understand it, was also a part of Al-Qaeda. And he has been apparently espousing these views over the internet for quite some time. So they obviously picked up on it. You know, now, they even talked about the fact that this individual was involved in an incident in 1995. Where he had spoke of an explosion rivaling the 1995 truck bomb at the MURRAH building in Oklahoma City, in which 168 people died, including children, you know, the Oklahoma bombing. So he way back then, this is an individual that talked about terrorists and terrorist plots. And he's apparently posted several disturbing posts on social media prompting violence and encouraging acts of terrorism, totally supporting Al-Qaeda. So they started monitoring him more closely back in 2017. Now, we look at these things, and you know, there's a lot on the news right now about children, the protection of children, et cetera. And here's an individual that was going out of his way to do this against children. Now, it's sad. I can't put it any other way. But he intended to provide these children and military families with explosive, remote-controlled toy cars in hopes of harming their parents. So he's giving the toys to the children, remote control, with the hopes that obviously they're going to get injured as well as the parents. So apparently he's also had a lengthy criminal background, including charge of felonious assault, domestic violence, and aggravated robbery. Now, they don't have any proof that he's actually ever traveled outside the country to actually meet with Al-Qaeda. But from what they can see, again, use on the internet, getting on the internet, some of the things that he has put out there, blow up, have a bomb, blow up the 4th of July parade, all of this is what he was encouraging others to do as well. Now, he also had recently, apparently, performed surveillance in Cleveland at sites that are typically populated on Independence Day. So there's different parks and also another place near the Coast Guard station. So where he made his mistake, and I'm glad he did, was that he had met with some undercover agents on the Sunday before 4th of July, where he also discussed a separate attack in Philadelphia. So now he's in Cleveland first. Now he's talking about some attacks in Philadelphia as well. And then obviously he was then arrested and charged with attempted material support of a foreign terrorist organization is what ended up happening. So, you know, once again, we have the FBI that was being very proactive. You know, when you start talking about eliminating some of these government agencies, and I know that FBI is under a whole lot of scrutiny right now, for a lot of different reasons. I'm not getting into that piece of it. But they've got people out there in law enforcement in general that are out there doing their jobs and trying to protect this country. And I think as citizens of this country, and whether you're a citizen or not, if you're a resident of this country, come on. I think that we need to encourage our law enforcement personnel to do what they need to do in order to keep us all safe. People always ask me, well, what about these police officers that do this and do that? Look, I'm not saying mistakes aren't made, so don't send me the hate mail, you know, talking about the fact that I'm encouraging, you know, anything negative, because I'm not. I was a police officer for 20 years. I don't believe that all police officers are bad, but I do believe that there are police officers out there that make mistakes. And that's going to happen, unfortunately, when you think about the number of people out there that might be doing something wrong, some not, I get it. You know, some of these police officers, you know, that are making these mistakes. But the FBI in this particular case, at least they were on the job. And I was actually able to get a copy of the criminal complaint actually filed against this gentleman. So, and I thought I would share the information in here. I don't know how many of you probably have never seen like a criminal complaint by itself, but these things are very interesting because this one's out of the United States District Court in the Northern District of Ohio, and you might be able to find it. They call him, he goes by a couple of different names. And that's another thing. When these guys are operating, they're moving around. They're not, you know, keeping the same name, and that's one way that they can normally evade. But this guy's name was also Demetrius Pitts, a.k.a. Abdur Rahim Rafiq, and a.k.a., another a.k.a., Sahaladin Osama Walid. So he has three different names. Now, they kept the dates of the complaint very narrow, June 15th, 2018 to July 1st, 2018. So everything that they used to arrest him and the evidence that they used was all gathered during that two-week period. Now, I will give you an idea because these guys are very, very detailed with this. But just to give you an idea about what would be in a complaint like this, they actually recorded this guy. So listen to this. During the recording, this is what was said. Only can we proceed to do what we need for the pleasure of Allah is we fight as one. We must kill all K-A-F-I-R-U-N-S. And for those of you that need to know that, that means disbelievers. Destroy, annihilate them. Look at our Muslim brothers and sisters being slaughtered each and every day by the disbelievers, armies, and they boast about it. So it's what he's talking about are the soldiers that are fighting against these groups, these various groups in the Middle East. Everywhere we go, we get treated wrong. It's time that we change this. They kill one of us, we kill 10,000 of them. Look, this is the way that these people think. How can we not want to protect our borders from people like this? They kill two of us, we kill their whole city. Forget all this pity-packed love stuff. Are you scared to die? Do y'all fear? If y'all are cowards, then what was the use of you saying, Ashhadu ala iha la ilha la? At any rate, bear with me on that one, but I think you get the point. All right? I'll tell you what it means, though. It means I bear witness that there is no God but Allah and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. We serve Allah, Allah above all else. We fight our enemies. We destroy them, and we destroy who try to oppose. They are Muslims who want to help the infidels. You make an example out of them. You kill them, and the best way example is three H's. Three H's. Head, hand, hand, decapitate, send it. Make your message be heard. Stop using ourselves as bombs. We do not strap bombs onto our bodies. Now, that's very interesting because when I was in that that class, those courses that I took for terrorist investigation, one of the things that got pointed out to us was that, you know, we had videos on this to look at, was that these individuals will strap bombs to their bodies, as we know from the news, but they don't want their hands destroyed, believe it or not. So a lot of the videos we saw, the hands were intact, the heads were intact, et cetera, and the bodies were kind of messed up. But the reason why they do that is because when they do something like that, their families are then held at a very high regard back in their country because of the way that they in fact, you know, how they gave their lives. So that's a plus for their families. So that's why they do that, so they can be identified, so they can, quote-unquote, get credit. Hey, by the way, like I said, if you have any questions or anything and you want to call and make any comments, 818-602-4929, all right? Now, they did another recording, and on that recording, it said, things that I have showed you on the videos, my Muslim brothers and sisters around the world, was very good, because going down there and seeing how the operation is going down there, some may look easy, but it's not. It's a planner. I like to sit out and watch, pay attention, and I tell you all this. Don't rush me to do nothing. Hey, I'm just reading this straight, folks. Cause rush makes haste, and haste causes lives and misfortunes of other brothers. So he's not worried about the other ones. He's worrying about the brothers. So before I would see a brother get hurt, get captured, I'm going to look at the whole situation and point. No matter what nobody say, nobody is going to command Saladin, which is a new alias now that apparently that he also had besides Pitts. So that gives you a rough idea about what, in fact, that people will do. Now, when we talk about going online or building these guns, and I tell you, I heard something else from a friend of mine that apparently they've got a new law coming out in California now that you actually cannot, you can no longer in California build an AR-15 without getting the state's permission. I'm not sure how that's going to work, and I'd be curious if any of my listeners are out there about how they feel about that. Because I know that there are people out there that follow the gun shows, you know, et cetera, and, you know, they depend on getting some of these things that they can make these AR-15s up. So that would be interesting. Again, the number is 818-602-4929. Getting back to, let's see, to Mr. Pitts here, there was something that they had a timeline about how they, about how they were following this guy as well. Now, you know, this is interesting because we don't get an inside look at how the FBI and some of these other agencies may, in fact, catch some of these people. So use of the internet is definitely one of them. And I got to tell you, you know, you need to be careful even as citizens and looking some of this stuff up, because they will, you know, send these trackers out there and look for people using certain words and keywords. So don't get yourself caught up in that. But at any rate, yeah, in February 2017, they reviewed Pitts about referenced Facebook accounts. A review of this account revealed Pitts was threatening violence against the United States. July 2017, Pitts expressed a desire to recruit people to kill Americans that were against Muslims, and also stated he had no remorse if he killed in the name of religion. And see, that's where some of these guys go a little bit off, in my opinion. It's in the name of religion. You know, there's a lot of religions out there, but I don't know any of them that profess killing people. So I'm not sure where this exactly comes from with the thinking of some of these individuals. And I know I've seen some of these talk show hosts interviewing some other people of the Muslim faith, and they're saying that, no, that's not all that there is to it. And it's kind of misleading from that standpoint. Now, they did, in fact, the Cincinnati location, the FBI investigated and revealed that Pitts was willing to conduct a United States-based attack and was willing, you know, to join an organization or whatever he had to do in order to kill people. So, you know, again, we have to be the eyes and the ears. I keep telling people that when we do, like when we do our training, law enforcement cannot do it all. Law enforcement has to be able to rely on citizens. We have to be able to rely on that. And, you know, we can't be so concerned about what people are going to say. It's just that simple. Law enforcement can't do it all. Now, the FBI in this particular case, because of the use of informants, looked like that they were able to do something. And that was good. I can't even imagine that at a 4th of July celebration where we would have had these explosive devices in these remote control cars and what they could have done. How devastating would that have been? That just would have been horrific. Well, it looks like we got a caller coming in here, so let me see what we got going on here. Hello, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or a comment to share?
Yeah. I'm sorry. My name is Jay. I'm calling in reference to an article you were talking about a couple of weeks ago on AR-15s.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, was that the one regarding what the state's getting ready to do in terms of, or I think it was effective July 1st. Is that the article you're talking about?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I mean,
you saw the article, obviously.
Yeah, no, I've made a couple of them on my own. Everything I've done has been above board, legal, registered, and whatnot. But there was a cutoff July 1st for people that wanted to register guns they didn't want to make, as they call featureless, to register those. And I noticed that the state has the website, and the only way you can register these is through the website, has crashed.
Oh, really? Is that because of the number of people that may be going on?
You know, that I really don't know. I know that there's a number of ways to make the guns legal and not have an issue with that. And, you know, you can get your registration number from the state or purchase the lower part of the rifle through a registered FFL dealer and not have to go through all this hoopla. But I was reading an article today, actually, that... apparently, not only has the state crashed, but there's been a massive breach. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, individuals
that were trying to register their guns, and instructors, dealers, and everything else have had their personal information given out, including photographs of their weapons and so forth and so on.
Oh, really?
And I guess this is, yeah. So I guess this is making people a little leery about registering their rifles and maybe making a lot of people a little bit more willing to take their chances and hiding their guns and being felons.
Well, you know what? Let's back up for a second. So you're talking about automatic rifles, which I've talked about in the show. You're talking about automatic rifles.
No, not automatic, but semi-automatic.
Okay, semi-automatic rifles. Okay.
Right.
Now, you said you had a couple?
I have.
Okay, let me ask you a question. So let's back up to that. At some point, you decided in your life that you were going to get these. Did you make yours? How did you get them? Let's go through that. What did you do?
Well, the first one I bought through a registered dealer. It was already manufactured, and since my son was going into the military, I figured he might want to kind of practice his marksmanship prior to going in. Bear in mind, this is a semi-automatic civilian rifle, not a full automatic M4 or M16. The other couple that I got, I actually saw that you could buy the lower, put it on a drill press, spend a few hours, drill it out, and make it on your own, which was, I thought, a challenge and interesting, and I started down that road.
So how long did it take you to actually make one from scratch?
Getting the parts and everything else, I took my time and I shopped around. I did not go the expensive route, I would say about a week.
So in 1 week you were able to do this. And how were you able to obtain the parts for this?
Various parts manufacturers throughout the country.
So how does that play into with gun shows? Because you hear a lot on the news about gun shows, and some places are cutting out gun shows. What?
Well, you can, and again, I'm not an attorney. I'm not an expert at all. This is just sort of me as a layman speaking. But, gun shows, you can buy the components, the separate parts. And you can, up until July 1st, you used to be able to buy the lowers without a serial number on them. But now you have to actually contact the state, the Department of Justice or ATF, to get permission to manufacture. So the average person just can't say, I'm going to buy parts and put a gun together. That just isn't going to happen. But the gun shows, certainly in California, there is no such thing as going in and just buying a gun without it going through an FFL. There's no loophole that I'm aware of for instant gratification on the purchase of a rifle or a pistol.
Well, now, you used a couple of terminologies here, so I want the listeners to know. ATF is Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which is a federal agency.
Correct.
Monitors these kind of things. And then you also mentioned FFL, and I'm not familiar with that one. Do you know what FFL means, by any chance?
Something to do with federally licensed firearms dealer.
Oh, okay.
I forgot what it stands for.
Oh, okay. That's fine. So you decided to make these for it sounds like a couple of different reasons, which is fine. But I guess the other question is, once you get them, what do you do with them? Because obviously
some people
use those. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'll let you finish in a minute. But obviously some people use these, for the wrong things, for the wrong reasons. But, generally speaking, what does a person really do with these once they make them?
I can only speak for myself. I just go to the range and try to improve my accuracy, the challenge of it. And I find that quite relaxing, if you will.
The gun range. So at the gun range, where anybody can go to a gun range out there, I know a few myself. But I guess the question is, they don't monitor it. They don't care anything about it. They're not saying you can't bring a weapon like that here. There's nothing like that, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I'm sorry, you were breaking up.
As what I was saying was that the gun ranges, they do not control in any way the kind of weapon you can bring there and shoot. In other words, looking at one of your ARs that you have, they can't turn around and say, no, those aren't allowed on here? At, you know, in this
range? I believe now they can. Because if you go into a gun, a range that with an AR that doesn't look like a featureless rifle, in other words, the stock cannot move. It has to have a particular type of grip. You can't wrap your thumb around the grip on the bottom. There's certain aspects to the magazine release mechanism. And if they see that, or they see a gun that doesn't have a serial number on it, you may be questioned, or they will ask you to leave. Or if there's law enforcement there, they might run the number on your rifle, and you might find yourself in a world of hurt.
Hmm.
So to some extent, yeah, I would say it's regulated. Now, maybe private clubs, I don't know. But the one thing that's concerning me now is, and there was an article in the Times about it, is that there are a number of arrests in Hollywood. People that are making these, still making them, because you can go out of state. You can bypass the California state laws and make as many of them as you want and then sell them to the criminal element, gang members, and so forth and so on. And that's what this bust the other day in Hollywood was about.
In Hollywood.
I think they confiscated something like 45, 50 various weapons.
Really?
So,
Who got busted? The people that got busted, were these Hollywood stars?
They didn't say. I would imagine not. but I mean, people like me that do it and are all above board and everything else are being restricted. I mean, I've been shooting since I was 5 years old back in 1956. And in high school, at University High, I took my rifles to school because there was a gun range of the administration building in the basement, and that's where we practiced. And there's just a change in attitude. I'm kind of jumping all over the place.
No, that's okay. That's interesting. Go ahead. I want to hear that. Go ahead.
But people like me, honest citizens that are, you know, law-abiding, seem to be taking the brunt of this, as opposed to the problem here to me is that criminal element. And with the legalization, I mean, the new laws that have passed for gun manufacturers that are doing it above board has driven gun manufacturing underground. I'm sure now, certainly in California, it's probably a lot more of a lucrative business to sell to criminals if you're willing to take the risk.
Who otherwise can't get a legal gun or don't want a
legal gun. Well, if you're a convicted felon, you're an attorney, you know all this. Or you have other issues where you've been restricted from having a gun, you could go to the black market and buy one. Not have it registered, and that to me is a far more dangerous aspect than the honest citizen.
Well, let's talk about the magazine capacity, because aren't there other issues concerning the magazine capacity as well?
Uh-huh.
So what's that
right.
All about? What's the limits on that, or do you know?
In California, without going through special licensing and everything else, or maybe law enforcement, I don't know, but the average citizen isn't allowed to have, it's against the law to have a magazine that'll hold more than 10 rounds, now whether that be a pistol or a rifle or a shotgun.
Well, shotguns are normally, they have plugs in them,
where
you only have five, so what do they do, take the plugs out, I guess?
Yeah, you can take the plugs out, and I guess there's people that buy their, you know, home defense shotguns.
Hmm.
Which might carry 8 rounds. I don't know.
You know,
shotguns I have 3.
I have heard some grumblings that they also are going to start that. I don't know if this is on a national level, but I know again in California, where they're going to start having you when you start to purchase ammunition, that you have to now register to purchase the ammunition. Have you heard something like that?
I have heard. In fact, the other day I just wanted to buy a box of ammunition, and only one person in the sporting goods store could sell it to me because he had to buy a $200 license in order to process the transaction. But as far as the individual goes, I think they're actually trying to pass a bill where anybody wanting to purchase ammunition will have to go through a background check similar to that of buying a firearm.
You know why they're doing that? They don't know. This is just my opinion, of course, but they do not know the people that have the guns that we have out here. So one way that they can double check is to do what? Trace you back through the ammunition that you buy. I mean, if you buy ammunition for a 30-06, they know in your household now you've got a 30-06. I mean, that would be
logical. Right. Well, that absolutely makes sense.
You know,
they might not know the serial number or the type, but at least they know you have. Yeah, that's one way, kind of the back door way of identifying somebody with a firearm.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a question. But isn't that going to reach a point where, with this business about registering for ammunition, I mean, I've been on the internet well enough and long enough to know that you can actually buy the equipment to make your own reloads. You don't have to buy it through
right.
the store. Is that correct? Do you know?
Yeah, you can do that. You can make your own reloads. I imagine at some point they'll probably try and track that as well.
But how are they going to be able to track it? Because people out there may already have the equipment at this point, and I haven't seen anything where they're addressing, you know, the equipment for the, you know, for making the reloads, for doing the reloads.
Well, maybe not the equipment, but the powder or the shot, the you know, different components of rifle cartridge. If you're buying a lot of gunpowder, well, as opposed to maybe a pound,
Well, wait a minute.
You're getting into something more serious. I speculation.
Are you telling me that you can actually buy gunpowder off the internet? That would be a
I don't know if you can or cannot anymore.
Yeah, because I could see that as a real issue. How the hell do they ship gunpowder? You know, you can't mail an envelope.
Well, that's
off
a curious question. I do not know.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I've seen it in the Cabela's catalog, Bass Pro Shop.
Oh, really?
So I would imagine that you still can.
Or at least maybe it goes to the store and you pick it up from the store because they get ammunition and stuff, and you'd probably have to go to the store. I can't even imagine that they would be shipping gunpowder.
It's online.
Wow.
Add to cart.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
I look at these things and say this is another example of how easy it is, you know, even with this guy that tried to do the sex toy explosion devices, we'll say, or even with the guy that did the toys for the children, how easy it is for people to be able to get things in order to be able to do harm to people. So I think that that's real interesting.
Well, anybody with a gun should know that it has to be out of reach of children. It should be locked up. It should be separated from the ammunition. I think the NRA pushes all that kind of education in order for people to keep a gun and keep it in a responsible fashion.
Well, that's the argument that people make, you know, regarding, you know, even with all of these school shootings and some of these shootings, Jay, are from, you know, people got guns with access to their parents or friends, relatives or whatever. It seems like there's just no control from some households. I can tell you in my household, that stuff is all under lock and key.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that simple. One of those reasons, of course, is I don't want my wife to get pissed off at me one day, so I figured I'd keep under lock and key and hide it.
Well, I can assure you mine are all locked up.
Well, unfortunately, she's not a violent person like that, for sure. But at any rate,
yeah.
Well, look, you know, Jay, I really appreciate you calling in. I think that some of this information is very good information for our listeners. I'm sure there's been some curiosity regarding this. Hey, one other question. Have you noticed do you follow the gun shows at all?
Every now and then I get kind of curious and I'll go to one, but I see that they're starting to try and cancel them, like in Costa Mesa, Ontario, what have you, certainly in California. But there's no deals, in my opinion, to be had there, so I just stopped going.
Well, you just hear a lot of hoopla on the news about gun shows and cutting out gun shows because I think people's limited perception may be the gun shows. And I know people that go to Las Vegas to the Las Vegas gun shows. You know, Vegas.
Well, that's a different world.
Well, for a lot of different reasons, it's a different world. But yeah, but people are traveling out there, and I think maybe even Arizona.
Yeah, well, because they figure they may, I know you, there's definitely a different market, a different type of different types of items. You certainly wouldn't want to be bringing them back to California. But I see with the DOJ website and it being down, and there are a couple of issues. I'd like to make in reference to that, and now of course to this breach, and the laws are very entailed and very confusing. And I've heard people say that they're not going to bother to comply. I mean, good, honest people, because A, they don't understand it, and they have to put out more money to make their firearm legal, and they just soon keep it in a locker somewhere. And I don't know, it's,
you know,
in its own way, it's forcing good, honest people to, well, you know, go to down a dangerous path.
Well, you know, again, we live in America. People always want to argue about the Second Amendment. I get that, you know, that, you know, the right to bear arms, et cetera. It's an old argument from that perspective. But, you know, it seems like the people that, you know, are there, I want to say the harmless people out there that are just, you know, people like yourself who just mm-hmm. want to have some fun at the range, et cetera, are going to be penalized, like you said earlier. But that's, you know, unfortunately, the laws in this country and these politicians have to address, even though some of this is on a smaller scale, you know, in terms of the people that are actually trying to do harm, it was less than 1% maybe, I don't know, the other 99% have to suffer as a result of it. These are people who want to get elected. But, you know, the other side of the coin is when you're talking about this breach, see, that's a major concern. Because what you're saying is that, you know, and the information that you got out of the LA Times, I think you said that somebody has breached that and gotten some confidential information about people that were trying to do the right thing. You never know what some of these hackers out there and the information they put out there and the climate right now out here that can be so hostile toward people. I don't know. I'm glad that I didn't fit into a category where my personal information was like that, was hacked, you know, about something like that, because these people now might be ostracized, contacted. You never know what may happen now with that breach.
Well, yeah, their home address, their phone numbers, their driver's license, what kind of weapons they have, photographs of the weapons. The mere fact, you know, that they have them might, like as you said, be a sore point for other people.
Right.
But, I would think it's a huge concern.
I want to say that I really do appreciate you calling in and sharing this. I think that the information, once again, for our listeners was really good information. I don't think the average listener would have probably have understood exactly how all this fit together, and you did a great job with explaining it, and I do appreciate your calling in.
Oh, it's a pleasure talking to you, Mr.
Yeah.
Potts.
Hey, listen, if you hear anything else in the future, you know, call in, let me know, you know, because, again, it's good information. It's not like I can get all the information. So if you hear anything else out there and another time you want to call in, please feel free to do so. Thanks a lot.
Oh, I will be happy to. You know, and anybody that has any wants the legal aspects of this, I mean, you know, should probably talk to an attorney.
Absolutely.
Who specializes in firearms to get it straight. But that's my take on it anyway.
Hey, I want the layman's take. You take it easy. Thank you, Jay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, that was very productive. I really appreciate the fact that he called in and to be able to lay it out for the general public in terms of exactly how that whole process fits together. I mean, I had a reasonable idea about it, but I didn't obviously know it to that extent. You know, again, we just have to be prepared for all this. You know, another example, you know, about people being prepared. The situation happened in Ontario, California, at a Sam's Club, where a 49-year-old man was taken into custody because of the fact that he actually put two small explosive devices, you know, in a Sam's Club. I mean, Sam's Club? I mean, I don't even know what the purpose of that possibly could have been. But fortunately, the bomb squad confirmed that the two homemade devices were detonated, but that fortunately there was no injuries or significant damage. So, you know, some of these guys are trying to do things. They don't quite know how to do it, so this is a failed attempt. that just caused a little damage and everything. But, hey, you just never know about these kind of things. So we just all have to be careful. We've got to be, more on the awareness side. All right? All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com, Jim Potts author. Be sure to join me next week. We'll be just discussing some more, hot topics. Some of these things are things that may pop up during the week. I'm going to be talking about some more violence in the workplace, incidents that have taken place over the last few months or so. We just have to be prepared. So signing off, as always, I'll always tell my listeners, be aware, be vigilant, and be safe out there. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.